This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Teresa Wills. The Appalachian coal fields are in the midst of an epidemic of severe black lung disease. Now, a study in the American Journal of Industrial Medicine finds there's also a dramatic increase in the lung transplants for affected miners. As Benny Becker reports, the study suggests taxpayer funds are most often covering the cost for the surgeries.
The study found 62 black lung patients had lung transplant surgery over the past two decades, and most of the miners lived in Kentucky, Virginia, and West Virginia. One such miner is Jerry Helton.
In 2016, they gave me 6 months leave if I didn't get a set of lungs, so I got a lung transplant.
A double lung transplant. It's a difficult and risky procedure. Helton's surgery had some serious complications.
I went into a coma. Everything in my body shut down, and they kept me on 21 different machines for 3 weeks.
Helton is mostly recovered, and thanks to his new lungs, he can breathe again. Helton had filed for and won his black lung benefits, so his former employer paid for the procedure. It's not cheap, as Dr. Jeremiah Hayenga explains.
I don't think there is any transplant that costs more than a double lung transplant.
Hayenga is a surgeon who has performed dozens of lung transplants. He's now working to launch a lung transplant program at West Virginia University, which would be the state's first. David Blackley, a researcher with the National Institute for Occupational Safety and Health, says the new study he led shows there's likely a growing need. He found that more than two dozen patients were placed on a wait list for transplants, and of those, 11 died while waiting.
In the last decade, the rate of lung transplants for patients with black lung increased nearly threefold. And so that suggested pretty strongly to us that this is a problem that's getting worse.
Blackley's study found that about a quarter of the transplant surgeries happened in the past 2.5 years. Almost two-thirds were paid for by public insurance, including the Black Lung Disability Trust Fund, which covers benefits for miners whose responsible employer has gone bankrupt or can't be identified. Insurance from coal companies and other private sources paid for about a third of the transplants. David Blackley says this epidemic, which is affecting thousands of miners and at younger ages than ever before seen, wouldn't be happening if coal miners were exposed to less dust, as required by federal safety standards.
Unlike some other conditions, this one is completely preventable. If there weren't these dangerous dust exposures occurring, this disease wouldn't exist.
For the Ohio Valley Resource, I'm Benny Becker in Whitesburg, Kentucky.
The Ohio Valley Resource is made possible by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and West Virginia Public Broadcasting. In a state like West Virginia, where the economy is so deeply connected with the ebb and flow of the coal industry, discussions about climate change are often avoided. In a recent episode of West Virginia Public Broadcasting's Us and Them podcast, host Trey Kay speaks with Catherine Hayhoe. In 2014, Time magazine named Hayhoe one of the 100 most influential people because she's one of the world's leading climate scientists and a lifelong evangelical Christian who's willing to tackle the hot-button topic of climate change. Here's an excerpt from the latest Us and Them episode, Touching the Third Rail with Catherine Hayhoe.
Dr. Catherine Hayhoe and her preacher husband, Andrew Farley, live with their son in Lubbock, Texas. She's a professor at Texas Tech University, where she's the director of their Climate Science Center. But she didn't grow up in the United States.
Growing up in Canada, you know, we learned that the sky is blue, the grass is green, and climate is changing due to human activity. I grew up in a home where not only science, but faith were equally valued. My dad is a science teacher and an education researcher, and also very involved with our local church. And in fact, we spent a number of years down in South America where my parents served as missionaries with the local church there as well. I grew up with the perspective that I did not realize was so unusual until I was much older, that faith and science are just two sides of the same coin. And if we believe that God created this amazing universe that we lived in, then what is science other than just trying to figure out what God was thinking when he put the whole thing together in the first place?
When I told some of my friends, many of them blue state liberals from the Northeast, that I was going to be interviewing a respected climate scientist, who also happens to be an evangelical Christian, I recall the curious look on their faces, kind of like dogs tilting their heads when they hear you make a baffling sound that they don't understand. A climate scientist who is an evangelical Christian? I thought those two things didn't go together. But Catherine Hayhoe says that Americans' perception that evangelical Christianity and science are mutually exclusive isn't a reality that she grew up with.
Growing up with a dad who's a science teacher, you're pretty much indoctrinated from an early age that science is the coolest and the best thing that you could possibly ever study. So when I was going to university, it wasn't really a question of what to study, it was just a question of which scientific field to study. And I opted for physics and astronomy, or astrophysics, because I love the idea that using nothing more than our brains and the instruments that we can build here on this tiny planet orbiting an average star, we can study and we can learn about what is happening in the furthest reaches of the universe. I think that is just absolutely amazing.
When Hayhoe was finishing her undergrad degree, she thought her next move would be to head to grad school for an advanced degree in galactic astronomy. But to finish her bachelor's, she needed to fulfill one more requirement and saw that a course on climate science would fit the bill. And what she learned in that course surprised her.
Of course, everybody's concerned about air pollution and water pollution and deforestation and biodiversity loss and climate change. And yes, you know, we really should fix these problems. But until I took that class, I did not realize that climate change is what the U.S. military now calls a threat multiplier. The reason why we care about a changing climate is because it takes all of these other issues and it exacerbates or it multiplies them to the extent where we will not be able to fix these issues if we leave climate change out of the picture. And by these issues, I do not only mean environmental issues. I personally care about climate change because it exacerbates humanitarian issues like poverty, hunger, lack of access to clean water, even political instability that leads to refugee crises. We are not going to be able to fix the most pressing issues that plague our world today if we leave climate change out of the picture.
After this course, Hayhoe made climate study her life's work. She immersed herself in the data and got a better understanding of just how humans contribute to the warming of the planet. In the early part of her career, she believed that if scientists would just provide the public with correct information, people would see the urgency and take action.
What I have learned since then, in the many years and even decades that followed, is facts are not enough. We have known enough to act on climate since scientists formally warned a U.S. president of the dangers of climate change over 50 years ago. That president was Lyndon B. Johnson. We have had the facts we need for decades, yet today we are further from action than we were, say, 15 or 20 years ago. It isn't more scientific facts that are going to tip the balance. It is understanding why this issue matters to us personally.
When did you first realize that your discipline in science might be at odds with the belief of the people who were of your faith? When did that happen?
Until I moved to the U.S. for graduate school, I had never met somebody who didn't drink. I had never met somebody who thought the Earth was 6,000 years old. And I had never met anyone who thought that climate change wasn't real. In fact, I didn't even really know these people existed except in the fringes of the internet. So it was a surprise to me to learn that this was, and today has become even more, almost an article of faith on people's statement of belief. There is nothing that is inherently in conflict with Christian theology. The idea that humans are responsible for this planet is laid out in Genesis 1. We're not usurping God's authority. We're actually given this planet to be stewards or caretakers or have dominion over this planet. And then you go all the way through the Bible. It talks about God's love and care and appreciation for and joy in creation, which is nature. And then all through the New Testament, it talks about loving and caring for people. And again, the reason why I care about a changing climate most is because it affects real people today, especially the poor and the most vulnerable among us. And then you get to the book of Revelation where it says God will destroy those who destroy the earth. So there's no inherent theological conflict between what Christians believe and between what scientists are saying is happening to the planet as a result of our energy choices.
Okay, so Hayhoe says there's nothing in the theology that should separate Christians from scientists. But it doesn't play out that way in real life. A 2015 Pew Research study suggests that only a quarter of white evangelicals believe the Earth's warming is due to human activity. About a third say it's due to natural weather patterns. And another third believe that there isn't evidence that climate change is occurring at all. So remember what I said earlier, that conversations about climate change touch the third rail of religion and politics? It might be because people's opinions on the topic are not informed by the Bible or what their preacher says on Sunday, but what they hear from political opinion makers like Rush Limbaugh.
My humble opinion, folks, if you believe in God, then intellectually you cannot believe in man-made global warming.
Or politicians like Oklahoma Senator James Inhofe.
My point is God's still up there. And this is the arrogance of people to think that we, human beings, would be able to change what he is doing in the climate is, to me, outrageous.
Again, Catherine Hayhoe.
It's really amazing the way the science has been politicized into these different tribes, to where if I belong to this group or that group, then I can't agree with scientific results. In the United States, over the past 30 years or so, political ideology has increasingly become the number one predictor of what tribe or what group we associate with. It's gotten to the point today where the number one predictor of who you will marry if you're not already married is no longer, you know, how attractive they are, how educated they are, whether they come from, you know, similar socioeconomic background or even their race. The number one predictor of who people will marry in the U.S. now is how close they are to you on the political spectrum. The Pew Political Polarization Survey has been tracking the landscape in the United States since 1994, and it shows that back in 1994, people were pretty moderate. Most people were kind of in the middle of the political spectrum. Today, the vast majority of people are out at the edges, not just on one side, on both sides.
Right.
When we survey people about whether they agree with the science on climate change and whether they think climate change is a serious concern, we see that white evangelicals and white Catholics are least likely to agree with the science and least likely to be concerned about a changing climate.
Hayhoe singling out white Catholics for their lack of concern about climate change is a detail that stuck out to me because there is another corollary. As it happens, Hispanic Catholics are one of the demographics most concerned about climate in the United States. And they really resonate with Pope Francis's 2015 encyclical about the seriousness of addressing how humans impact the planet. But white Catholics don't feel the same.
The encyclical actually decreased people's trust in the Pope if they didn't already agree with him on climate change. As they would say here in Texas, there's a lot of "Oh, bless his heart" going on, which sort of means, you know, you're metaphorically patting the person on the head saying, well, he means well, but he doesn't know what he's talking about. So when we dig deeper into the data, we see that it isn't what people believe, and it certainly isn't where they sit on a Sunday for an hour, that is actually predicting their opinion. When you actually look at what's causing people's opinion, it is not being evangelical and it is not being Catholic that is causing people to reject the climate science. It is the affiliation of specifically white evangelicals and white Catholics with conservative politics because of issues on abortion and issues related to race that date back decades in the U.S.
We've been listening to an excerpt from WVPB's podcast, Us and Them, episode, Touching the Third Rail with Catherine Hayhoe. To hear the rest of the story, download Us and Them from wherever you get your podcasts or listen online at wvpublic.org. West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. You can keep up with the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. Support for our news bureaus comes from West Virginia University, Concord University, and Shepherd University. Our producer is Glennis Board. I'm Teresa Wills.